I'm Jeremy Greer.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this is Days of Future Cast, the podcast where we talk about all things X-Men. And we are here, Gary, the last three episodes of what has been a mostly wonderful season of X-Men 97.
None of these three episodes are a dud. It ends on a huge, huge high note.
Yeah, I think all of this stuff in the next three episodes is going to be super fun to talk about. I have some quibbles. I'm going to talk about them a little bit in this episode. But also, I don't know that there's an X-Men comic book that I would unequivocally recommend and say it was 100% great, right? Like, there's always
X-Men get quibbles.
X-Men get quibbles a lot. Like some of my favorite series, like, you know, if you look at New X-Men by Grant Morrison, like, I have some quibbles, right? So,
you have to sit down and talk to give the, like, take somebody 2 weeks of getting prepared for bad art camp to do that comic. Like, you have to be like, listen,
like, there's going to be a moment and you're going to want to put it away. Good.
There's going to be a couple of moments where you're going to look at somebody's face. And this is even if you like Frank Quitely, who is hard to get used to. Even if you like Frank Quitely, there's going to be a couple of panels. You're going to be like, fuck. And want to put it down, you have to push through.
Yeah. Or even like some stuff like, you know, a lot of the Rick Remender stuff, you're like, oh, this is going to be very, very good. There's three issues where they're going to be like the Avengers show up for no reason and then they're going to go away and you don't have to worry about it anymore. Like, you have to kind of prepare people for it. But so today we're talking about season one, episode 8, Tolerance is Extinction, part 1. This aired on May 1st, 2024. I was in Italy. And I had to log into Italian Disney to be able to stream this.
Il Disno, yeah.
Yeah. Autumn was taking a nap and I went down to like the cafe in the hotel and like streamed this with headphones.
Nice.
The X-Men must unite to face a new threat.
I love that description.
Just simple and to the point.
Trouble abroad.
Directed by Chase Conley, written by Beau DeMaio, Anthony Saliti, Maria Wilson. Obviously, if you've been keeping up with this, you know that Genosha has been attacked. The X-Men are on the hunt for Bolivar Trask, where they find him in Madripoor. And when Rogue seemingly murders him, he turns into a human sentinel. And it turns out that he thought he was working for Mr. Sinister, but actually Mr. Sinister has been working for somebody else. We know this to be Bastion. The show has not quite told us that yet.
Yeah, we'll get it this episode.
New stuff in the intro. I noticed that we see Asteroid M for the first time with Magneto standing on top of it, which is kind of cool.
They also brought Storm back for the intro. She's always had the little intro thing, but they show a scene with Storm because they're like, oh yeah, don't worry, Storm's coming back. Yeah. We start off with Cable doing target practice outside the mansion.
I love that he's just shooting bottles. Like, we have a danger room, Cable.
Danger room. We could also probably put up some wooden targets for you or something.
Yeah, yeah. Please don't leave glass in the yard or shoot the apple trees.
The Xavier's gifted team of badminton players are going to have a really horrible season as they run around in that glass.
This orchard is 5 centuries old, and you're shooting it with your gun, with your space gun.
Cyclops and Jean Grey are in the mansion looking out, and Cyclops talks about how he's been avoiding him. They haven't talked. Yeah. You know, this is his son. And they kind of fill in some plot blanks. Like, what happened to Bishop? Well, you know, they were actually separated in the time stream. He landed alone in the future. That's a lot of guilt. And he says, I sent Nathan in the future to help him, but it turns out that future was so bad that he had to come back here to prevent it.
only Scott Summers, man. Like, just bad shit happening to Scott Summers all the time. And he wonders, like, you know, how could I possibly be a father to this grown man like Xavier was to me? And Jean sort of reassures him, saying, like, some lessons are taught and others are learned. Like, you're just going to have to kind of feel your way through this. I like that a whole lot. I'd say I don't have kids. You don't have kids. I don't think either one of us are going to have kids anytime soon or ever. And I had this idea of like fatherhood being something that you have to learn that you can't really teach is good. So
that makes sense. Nathan briefs the team. The villain's name is Bastion. And I love this. He's talking about this. He's like, you know, in my timeline, he used the Genosha attack to get funding. You're the backlash from the Genosha attack to get funding for the Sentinels. And he uses the techno-organic virus that was used on me to infect humans, turn them into Sentinels. And Morph says, like, oh, you know, just another apocalyptic dystopia, you know, where Logan is the last to die. Logan grunts. He goes, it wasn't a dystopia. It was a utopia.
Yes.
It worked. Like Bastion did enslave the humans, turning them into, you know,
I meant to say mutants there, my bad.
Yeah. He made the humans better, made them into mecha humans. And the mutants were the future's background, turned them into slaves. We get to see a little cameo. We see the guy with the metal arms from the old days of Future Past cartoon.
Yes.
That is not in the comics. He's there. We see Polaris like fixing the Earth's magnetic fields, which is really cool.
It's like middle aged Polaris.
She's
been doing this for a while.
I love the idea that like, no, this isn't bad for everyone, you know. That is a really interesting ethical question. Like the X-Men and mutants are given this, it's really brave in the face of the metaphor. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Like this idea that like if the X-Men just gave in, like this does end up really well for a lot of people. You know, it's not all the other futures that deal with oppressing the X-Men are horrible for everyone.
Yes.
You know, it's Age of Apocalypse. This one, they're saying like, no, this won't be horrible for everyone.
Yeah.
It'll just be horrible for you.
Yeah.
You know, that's really interesting. Like imagine that from a metaphor perspective, if like a story was saying that like, if we gave in to homophobic bigots, it's going to actually work out for straight people. You know, and the point of this, like the reason why that's interesting is because it's still not worth it.
Exactly.
You know, the X-Men still say no, and it's because you can't budge an inch on that shit. You can't say like, yes, I will give up, you know, this class of people so I have an easier life.
Yeah.
But it makes the temptation there, because in something like a Days of Future Past or a Age of Apocalypse, there's really no temptation because it's bad. It's just a dystopia. Nobody wants it. You're doing something purely heroic to avert it. Here, you're doing something heroic to avert it, but there's like stakes, you know, there's kind of an argument for it.
And the, you know, the point from the mutant side is that, you know, it's not, there's no utopia that's worth enslaving another people, of taking away their free will, right? Like that, it's not a real utopia. But of course, you know, the straight white cis women of the world would probably argue against that.
It just makes it a temptation. It gives you a reason why people might go along with it. Like
absolutely.
The X-Men aren't going to go along with it. Good people aren't going to go along with it, but nobody wants Days of Future Past. Like nobody, you know, it's always night. There's just garbage in the alleys. You have to run. You have to live in the sewers and shit. This is could be good for people. Some people.
I think it's notable here too that it took Bastion. Nathan says it took him like 300 years to get to this point too. Like there had to be multiple generations of people who forgot what it was like in the first place not to rely on mutants as slaves, right? Like,
yes.
Because if you're born into this, like you would like to think that you would look at like, oh, well, this is obviously bad and terrible, but it's real easy to be born into something and to assume that the things that you see around you are right and good.
What fucking happened to us? Like we're white guys in America. Mm-hmm. Like that's literally what we grew up with.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, is benefiting from colonialism and chattel slavery and not really seeing that because it's just in the water.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Really sophisticated storytelling for a cartoon.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's, and you know, again, like doing almost a better job than a lot of the X-Men comics do, to be honest with you.
Like it's exemplar. Like it's a very good version of that.
It is very, it's probably in the top 10 examples of using the X-Men as a metaphor for queerness, right? Mutants as a metaphor for queerness that we've seen, I think, in the X-Men media.
Queer started out as a racial metaphor. You know, and then kind of a flexible metaphor for oppressed people. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not trying to downplay the queerness angle of it as well, but just like a bunch of, you know, Bodemio is queer and black. You know,
absolutely.
And also there are racial overtones to this as well. You know, really interesting. And at one point Wolverine says, why didn't you stop Genosha?
Yes.
You know, and every time he tries, time stops him. You know, the people from Doctor Strange's Monk Academy say there are certain things that happen across all timelines.
Yeah. And this is one of those fixed points. This is interesting because for a lot of reasons, but also I think like, you know, we know that Marvel is investing heavily in like multiple timelines. And like, we've seen this with Loki. We've seen this with even Deadpool and Wolverine of like multiple timelines and having to protect the quote unquote sacred timeline. And we've learned that there's specific points in those timelines that you know, cannot be changed. So this is, it's a very small thing, but it's a connection back to the MCU, which is, just kind of, I think it's kind of neat. It's kind of, it's just kind of, mm-hmm. I just think it's neat.
They're flirting with it. They're bringing it in.
Mm-hmm. And I like that the fact they ask the Cable, like, how many times did you try? It's like, it's so many times.
Enough to give up.
Yeah. And there is a division between Scott and Cable. Scott wants to do some reconnaissance. He wants to try to figure out exactly what they're up against and try to figure out and make a plan. And Cable's like, no, I've seen enough of this. Like, we have to go after it. And I'm like, where are y'all going? Like, where does Cable want to go?
That is a good point. They're going to figure it out. But I love that this gets interrupted, by this news report showing Xavier with the Empress swearing glory to the Imperium.
Yes.
And pinning the X-Men, saying, like, you lied for this. Xavier's assassin Gyrick was found dead, basically trying to drum up, Bastion is doing this PR thing, associating the mutants with aliens.
Yes.
The leader of the mutants is going to bring an alien army down here. At no point when I was watching the Leandra stuff, the Shi'ar stuff in this series, did I think that had a bigger part in Bastion's plan. Really, again, very cool villainy.
Absolutely. Like, way it's presented to us too is like, he shows this to Mr. Sinister, like, I don't think that this is necessarily something that, like, he planned from the outset. Like, he picked this up, this radio thing, and said, I can use this, right? Like, he adapted his plan to incorporate this, and I think that makes him even scarier as a mutant.
As a villain.
I'm not just going to do the Mr. Sinister thing of, like, I'm going to kidnap Jean and try to make a clone and stick to that no matter what. Like, I'm learning from past mistakes, and I'm adapting as I go.
Yeah. The thing that Bastion says to Mr. Sinister can also be said about this cartoon versus the old series.
Yeah, that's true.
Where he's like, mm-hmm. Your old ways didn't work. Like, this is kind of signaling, like, no, we're not doing shit like that. We're on a different level. Really good. Louis gets really pissed and destroys the TV.
Yeah.
Not productive, but okay. Jubilee and Roberto, they're watching the news, and his mom is planning a fundraiser for Genosha. Again, this is well-meaning liberal, right? Yes. Like, someone needs to help those poor souls. The X-Men certainly aren't. I can throw money at them, even though I won't allow my son to be out.
Exactly.
Better than nothing. Like, not, a KKK member, but also not good enough.
And Jubilee gets fed up at this, and it's like, hey, look, we got to get out of here. Like, let's go hit the mall. Let's go take some retail therapy.
My girl's got to go buy a fucking diving suit for some reason.
we do not question Jubilee's fashion on this podcast, Gary.
it's an all black. It's a diving suit. It's a onesie.
It is.
It's fucking weird. It's cool. A skin tight onesie.
I would wear it in the 90s. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. If I was a contested on Taskmaster, this would be there my outfit. Meanwhile, Nightcrawler and Jean are at Rogue's side. I thought this was kind of a weird moment, and maybe, like, I just don't remember this, but, like, they almost introduce each other to one another, because he calls her Mrs. Gray, and she's like, no, you can just call me Jean. And he's like, oh yeah, Madeline also liked first names. And I'm like, did they just not know each other in the cartoon? Like, if I just up on that?
I think the implication was that Nightcrawler has only known Madeline.
I guess Jean is technically like, okay. So you're not,
it's weird though. I don't think it's necessary. I think I agree with you. That's a little bit of an awkward moment.
Yeah.
We could have glossed over that.
A writer was just having fun basically.
Yeah.
And he tells her about how hard Madeline had it. And Jean sympathizes and remembers through their like psychic bond, like tells him like, it's weird because I feel like I've experienced all of Madeline's memories, even like giving birth to Nathan and doing all of these and having pregnancy cravings. And Kurt says, like, if you remember it, that's just the same as having done it. If she remembers how that felt. And I think I got some of this confused when I was writing the notes, because he talks about, I thought he says he was abandoned by Mystique for being too blue for her, but that doesn't make any sense, right? Like, what did I miss? That is what he says.
Yeah. The cartoon is still doing, I feel like the last Nightcrawler highlight episode that shows his origin might be the one where it shows Mystique yeeting him off a fucking waterfall. yeah. Because in the cartoon, she was, he's the son of a noble. And Mystique, this is before this all got retconned for Mystique to be his dad.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah,
and Destiny to be his mom. Uh-huh. So like, this is his understanding at the time.
Regardless of the history, I think the message here that he's saying, which is like, oh, I met her later, and eventually we put our differences aside and accepted each other.
Later.
And said family is a choice. And, you know, as a guy that did thousands of hours of conversation about the TV show Supernatural, like this, that's a big theme, right? Like family, found family is a big theme of that show. Regardless of what the finale says, it's a big theme of that show.
Theme of real life.
And real life and the X-Men, right? Like, that's a big thing for the X-Men as well. But we're going to, Gene and Scott are going to jump into the Blackbird and chase down Cable's lead. He's got an address. We don't care how.
He's got an address and Beast gets an address. Like they're going to be up in the air. Beast is going to find a place where all the Sentinels are as well. Yeah. It's a little confusing how they get the information.
Meanwhile, we cut over to Sinister's lab, and surprise, Val Cooper is there. She's also a survivor of Genosha. And she calls him Bastion's very own Mangali. Mingala, excuse me. And Sinister is like, oh, that dude was an amateur. Like, he didn't go far enough. And I'm like,
he suffice himself being a Nazi pup.
Mingala
being the Mr. Sinister of World War II, the dark, super dark scientist who did a lot of vivisection and shit.
Yeah, really dark shit. Meanwhile, Magneto is in the same lab on a giant X. Like, I guess you would still call it crucified if it's an X. I don't know. But yeah. Like, and he has got like a ton of TVs aimed at him, which is probably like Magneto's worst fear. Stop.
Yeah. Like this started as an art installation. They thought it'd be better as a way to torture Magneto.
Yeah, exactly. He's got obviously got a power suppressor on and refuses to talk to Val Cooper, even as she apologized to him, saying like she didn't know what would happen. And she's like, please curse me something. You must have something to say. And he just gives her this look of like, I am going to fucking destroy you.
So, you know, this reveal, Val Cooper was the plant at the UN or what have you.
Yes.
That was going along with this. She's being true when she says she didn't know that Genosha was going to, you know, massacred like this, but she knew about the Sentinels and stuff.
Yes.
She knew about this program. She's going to find out more as we go. Bastion's been keeping her partly in the dark as a useful tool.
Meanwhile, Trish Tilby shows up at the X Mansion with coffee for Beast, and who is spending his time analyzing the corpse of the cyborg version of Trask, and using it to basically figure out how many other human Sentinels could possibly be out there, like its own little Cerebro. The Summers family. I like that the Summers family is a team for most of this episode. Yep. It's very cute, very good. They show up at the address that Beast tracked down, and it turns out to be not a secret lab to build Sentinels or a master mold. It's Bastion's home that he grew up in. And as they go inside, they see family photos, and they eventually run across Bastion's mother, who says that she was expecting them the next day. She's got to pack up to go with them. And everybody just kind of accepts this as normal. There's a very, very, like, obvious sense of sorality happening right here.
Yeah.
Like, this feels very weird.
Cable even says we should probably just play along for now.
Yeah.
See where this goes. They go into Bastion's room, his childhood room, and Gene picks up psychic memories of him. You know, a kid who could hear machines, you know, as a teenager. They call him a mutant at this point, and then she realizes what had happened was his dad got infected by the techno-organic virus, by Nimrod, and then got his mom all jacked up in the belly, and this is what made him. We get this kind of thing that's not quite a mutant, not quite a machine. He's a new thing.
All jacked up in the belly, indeed.
Yeah, see, he gets all jacked up, and the sperm grew in her belly.
Yes. The techno-organic virus sperm. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. So he's not quite a mutant, and he's not quite a human, and he's not quite a machine. So, like, I think they even call him some sort of weird abomination. And we see him as a child, like, asking his mother, you know, will I ever be normal? And his mother being like, you know, you were normal enough for me. And then Gene says, like, he has been descended from every type of Sentinel. And I'm like, okay, did y'all let Chris Claremont sneak in here? Like, what are we doing?
It's really just Nimrod.
Yeah, it's just Nimrod, who is also every type of Sentinel. I get it, but at the same time.
He's the super Sentinel. He's the best one.
Yeah, exactly. You
know? Yeah. He doesn't contain all the shitty Sentinels. He doesn't contain the ones from the arcade games that are 6 feet tall. So back in Sinister's lab, Val is very angry about Genosha to Bastion.
Yes.
You know, like, you should have told me about this. And Bastion is having a conference call with other supervillains.
This is great, dude. This is real fun. So much.
He's basically explaining himself. He's like, no, that was the point. I'm overloading the humans. You know, if I give them something that's way too big to process, they're just going to be apathetic about it. And we check in on other supervillains. Dr. Doom says he's not going to forgive these war crimes. And he just goes, noted. And Baron Zemo goes, you know, you can't do this while the president is still in the mutants' pockets. And he's like, no, I've taken care of that. You know, he's way ahead of it. He's basically dog walking these villains.
And man, I know we've talked before. We've talked, we briefly dipped into like the Israeli-Palestine thing in the last time we recorded, talking about
Sabra in the New World.
They're like, and I know that conflict has been going on for decades, but obviously, like, we have over the last couple of years entered into to make it even more serious. Like, I don't think there's any way that they could have absolutely known. It's so wild to me, like, that this fits that so perfectly, right? Like, that Bastion is saying exactly what is happening in real life, which is like that conflict is so big that it makes people apathetic towards it. Like, there's only so many pictures of dead children that you can see before you go a little like blind to it.
Yeah. You get overloaded, which he compares it to a machine, which is his language, but that's literally how our brains work with this shit.
Yeah. And then like, seeing like Dr. Doom, like, I'm going to go along with this, but I'll have to, you know, I won't forgive war crimes. Like, it feels very much like the United States being like, you know, wagging our finger at Israel without stopping anything.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it's just wild to me how apt this is, how ripped from the headlines it feels.
It's really good. Mm-hmm. There's a weird bit where somebody who's in shadow, a lady, says, you're going to keep Val Cooper on staffs to make sure we get memos about future atrocities. Do you know who that is?
The only thing I could thumb up with is Madame Hydra.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too, like Madame Mask or Madame Hydra. But Baron Zemo is a Hydra guy.
But sometimes Madame Hydra. Wait, who is? There's a chick over AIM too, right? Who is that?
There's a chick, Madalie Rapinoff or something like that. There's a.
I wonder if this is the AIM component to all of this.
AIM component or the hand?
Could be the hand. Yeah,
could be the hand. It's a weird choice to put them in silhouette.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll come back to it. Who knows? I seriously doubt it.
No. I thought for a second maybe it was supposed to be Le Fontaine, the Thunderbolts lady.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which would be a reason why, if they didn't have the likeness rights to Julia Dreyfus, and then also they, you know, yeah. So I don't know. It's a weird moment though. Here. Basically, as he's explaining this, he says, you know, this is a numbers game. The future, you know, I've seen mutants end up outnumbering humans 10 to 1 mm-hmm. and humans go extinct. You know, so what I've done is I've created this discrete version of Trask Sentinels, blaming mutants, you know, these people who are blaming mutants for taking away human jobs.
This is insanity to me, man. Like, this whole speech is just so fucking crazy. Like,
it's really fucked up. But again, real ripped from the headlines.
Yeah.
You know, people can't speak out against mutants. They just find chat rooms where they're allowed to be bigoted and express themselves. And then I find them.
Yes.
You know, that's the alt-right pipeline.
And he says he's turning them into these sentinels, using the techno-organic virus and like putting them back in society, where they don't even know that they've made that decision, right? And like, they may just like be in a situation one day where a sentinel does something wrong to them, and then they'll break out and kill that mutant. A mutant does something wrong.
Or not even wrong. They're like, oh, a mutant might hit on them in a bar.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and they get activated.
And then that's what will activate them. And it's terrifying. Like, this is very much way worse than anything we've ever seen Mr. Sinister do.
Yeah. This is really nasty. And Val is like, you know, this sucks. Like, this, you are, people don't know what they're being turned into, mm-hmm. you know? And Bastion's like, no, you know, you're like a dinosaur fretting about the asteroid. Like, this, you know, this doesn't matter. She goes, I'm concerned you're the asteroid. And he kind of smiles at this.
Yeah.
You know, I am the asteroid.
The Bastion's mom finds the Summers family in Bastion's room and says that he was a difficult pregnancy. And she shows them a painting that he titled The Final Dream, which is this incredible, like, apocalyptic picture of Sentinels just murdering mutants. As she's having this, if she's kind of going through like his difficulty growing up, she turns into one of these human sentinels as her bones crack. They do a lot of like body horror stuff with these human sentinel stuff, which is really, really satisfying. And as this happens, we cut over to Jubilee, who, as you mentioned earlier, is buying a
wetsuit,
fashionable wetsuit. Roberto is just saying like, hey, you know, just trust my mom. She just needs time. She's going to come through this. And then I thought this was the sales clerk, but no, this is Roberto's the butler.
Yeah. The one thing that, you know, we talk about little bits that are not, you know, perfect about this. There are too many of these things. The idea that it feels like rough. It reminds me of the end of John Wick 2, where 80% of New York are assassins.
Yes, absolutely.
This idea that 80% of people signed up for the Secret Sentinel program and it's still a secret.
Yeah.
Is fucking incredible.
Just like
to me,
so many of them. Like I like the fact that, like, we're going to learn a little bit, like, he turned his whole hometown.
Yeah, that's great.
And I feel like that's really good. And like, this sets the trap, like, it sets the, you know, has the Summers family or has the X-Men team, like, show up in his hometown. But when, like, literally, like, most of the mall that they're in turns into a Sentinel, I'm like, okay, like, when was the Brazilian component of sign up to be a Sentinel program? Like, what is that? What was this outreach program like?
Who's in these chat rooms?
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
The idea, you know, this is a metaphor for secret bigots, right? Like, somebody who's going to get mad when somebody hits on them or whatever at a bar and stuff. And there are a lot of bigots out there, but it's simply not true that it's 80% of people, you know? And I'm not saying that to be optimistic.
Yeah.
You know, like, far be it for me to be optimistic about the world. But in real, one of the reasons why, you know, you don't get up and stand in front of a bus every day is that, like, these people are scared little freaks, and they are a minority. Like, you know, it's not most people in the country who are like this.
Yes.
And from just a mechanics standpoint, one Sentinel, one of these super Sentinels, was supposed to be a big enough threat for the X-Men entirely. You didn't need to give us hundreds of them.
Well, it really,
the mall scene is really where it gets to be too much.
It defangs them a lot to me, right?
Yes.
Like if we had Trask, like, was Trask just a better version? Because he did, like, one
he's
shot.
He's a worse version. And literally say he's a worse version.
Yeah, but, like, he knocked out Rogue in one shot. And, like, they make a specific point to say that out loud on the show. And then, like, they have hundreds of these things show up, and we see him just kind of being mowed down. And you're like, well, like, I kind of wish they would have started out of, like, oh, these weren't as powerful as previous Sentinels, but, like, we're going to overwhelm them with numbers. Like, that's our goal.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, and this is definitely one of my quibbles of, like, there's just how many of these things there are in the last few episodes. So the butler turns into one at the mansion. Beast is running a scan and realizing that these things are all over the world. And we see, like, moms and dads turning into them, like, dudes in a, like, sitting around in a, like, a fucking burning barrel. And then even Trish Tilby, who stops Beast from alerting the rest of the team that this is about to happen and knocks him across the room and says, like, it's heartbreaking finding out that you're no longer nature's favorite. Just really, really good line there.
And we get to, she blasts him into the living room, you know, tells the mutants to surrender, and Morph, Nightcrawler, and Wolverine are here, who we have not seen fight yet.
Yeah.
You know, the old cartoon, you'd see everybody fight in basically every episode, but they weren't, like, highlight fights. One of the cool things about the cartoon is we get highlight fights, and this is our Nightcrawler, Wolverine, and Summers family highlight fight episode, and it's great.
And it's all so fucking dope, dude.
It's so good, yeah.
Speaking of Summers family, they've realized that they are now in a town that Bastion has turned completely into these human sentinels. And in the mansion, Nightcrawler starts, like, trying to teleport the team, like, away from this, but gets, and Morph, like, to block it, like, turns into Juggernaut that starts like throwing punches, but he gets thrown back into Nightcrawler, and they go through a wall and land in the library, and swords, like, two swords fall in front of Nightcrawler, and you're like, what's about to happen here? It's so good.
Jubilee and Roberto are surrounded by the human sentinels in the mall. They run. Jubilee says, I'm totally done with malls. You know, Roberto uses his power here. Again, too many of these guys.
Yes.
The crowd that's outside Xavier's mansion who are protesting, they also turn into Sentinels.
Yeah.
Not every one of them, but 50%. Like 2/3.
Yeah. Like a lot. Yeah. Of them. Yeah.
Fucking, they fly towards the mansion, which is now burning.
Wolverine starts attacking Trish again, and she grabs him and flies him, like, way in the sky, and this looks fucking incredible.
This is incredible.
And he's thrown down back towards the mansion, and as he does so, like, other human sentinels are flying towards him, and as he's falling, like, fucking meteor speeds, he's just slicing and dicing these fools as he goes down. It looks incredible, and I love this.
Really good.
And they crash into, like, the back into the mansion together. Like, Trish, like, grabs him in the middle of this and, like, shoves him down even further. So good.
Yep. The human sentinels have all gathered on Rogue, who is still knocked out from the first sentinel, and they're approaching her. They bear her ill intent. Wolverine stabs one from behind her, you know, they say, Trish says, why resist the inevitable? He holds up his claws and says, I have six reasons why. And then Nightcrawler pops in, and he has three swords.
Yeah.
And he goes, no, my friend, nine, which is both 6 + 3 = 9 and the German word for no.
Yeah. So
excellent.
Good. And right. Really great wordplay. Like just fantastic.
Pretty fun.
I feel like I was literally cheering in Italy when I was watching this. Yeah.
It's so good to see Nightcrawler use a fucking sword.
I know, man. It's so fucking cool.
He didn't do that cartoon. He doesn't do it that often in the comics, but it's so cool. And this is the coolest we've seen since X2. Like the coolest we've seen Nightcrawler in action.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
Him teleporting around graceful, like being a, a dexterity fighter, basically. He's a dex main, here. And it's just fucking cool as hell to see them fight together.
It's
awesome.
It's just amazing, dude. It's so, so good. And it's just fun to watch. The animation is so good here. Like, it's just literally him and Wolverine just ripping through stuff. And at one point, Wolverine stabs through one of these guys, and Nightcrawler stabs him from the other sides, and then teleports them away. And for, I feel like the first time ever, I might be missing a comic book scene somewhere.
But this happens in the comics for sure. This is the first time we've seen it an animated or movie medium.
But we actually go through the teleport with Nightcrawler, like, and it kind of like does this like kind of, you know, reality distorting thing with Wolverine, and it's so fucking cool. Like, I love this.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. They're getting people away from Rogue, basically.
We see Jubilee being chased, and she's forced to like jump across a roof, which of course she can't do. And then
she tries to fly for a second. Like, she says, everyone can fly except for me, and she kind of pushes her firecrackers down and then just falls. It's cute.
And for the first time, we see Roberto fully powered up. And he's surprising her about flight. He says he's been practicing this in the danger room, which is pretty cool. Meanwhile, the Summers family has gotten back to the Blackbird. They're being chased by all of these human sentinels. I love that Jean takes the time to like telekinetically like fasten Nathan's seatbelt. Like, she's kind of in mom mode with Nathan, and it's very, very funny.
I love her clearing the sentinels off too. They're on the roof, and she kind of picks a bunch of them and throws them off.
It's very fun.
Like,
really good use of powers. Yeah.
Yeah, but the Sentinels run into one of the engines, into the propeller, and the plane's going to crash. So they have to abandon the plane.
She says, Hank is going to kill you. This is the third one in so many months to Cyclops.
I love that, because the X-Men had been basically hanging around playing basketball.
Yeah.
Before this new thing happened for a while. So presumably Scott's just been crashing Blackbirds for fun.
Just, you know, going out and seeing how they land without a pilot. And like, so they abandon this plane, and then somehow, like, out of the wreckage flies a Porsche.
Yeah.
And they're just all in this Porsche. And even Cable is like, you drive a Porsche? And Cyclops just smiles, like he's so happy about this.
Why the fuck does Cable know what a Porsche is?
Also true. Yeah. How does Cable know what a Porsche is?
Oh, they still have Porsches in the future. They have a deep pot to play, Charles. Like, fuck that shit is. Like, yeah,
they're trying to block the family in, and they go into this cave. Cable rips off the top, and Cyclops says, let's show these toasters why you don't screw with the Summers. And I thought we were in an episode of Battlestar Galactica for a minute. I was very, very excited.
It's nice.
But Jean grabs the controls, and so Cyclops starts blasting the way ahead of them, and as Cable takes care of it, like, he's like shooting the human sentinels that are chasing them. They blast through the side of this mountain, and the car is, I think, is completely destroyed at this point, but like Jean surrounds them in a telekinetic bubble and lands, and it's just like, I even think there's like
a hero landing.
Dun, 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 dun. Like they even play the music a little bit, and I'm just like, this is fucking great. This is so great.
It's super good. Back at the fundraiser, you know, Roberto and Jubilee get there, and they're powered up. They crash in saying, hey, Sentinels are trying to kill us. And the Sentinels, now they're in front of all these people, they stop and they're saying, we don't kill mutants. We save them. Stand down. Again, a PR thing, right? Yep. Like, Bastion wants to enslave mutants, not just murder them for this. And they've been doing non-lethal stuff so far, right? Like, the first one that fought the X-Men knocked everybody out.
Yes.
Like, Rogue's not dead. Mm-hmm. Roberto's mom says, do what he says, you know, give in here. And they do. We cut to Bastion pulling up at the mansion, his Rolls Royce, very excited. You know, one of the Sentinels tells him, you did it. You saved the world. However, he gets a little hologram from Sinister that says Val Cooper left Magneto out.
Yep.
Let Magneto out.
And he teleports back. I mean, he says it's too little too late, but he still has to like go back and deal with it. And he calls like her little rebellion, the fight with the future, and he calls it futile. And Val begins this long speech, And she says that she felt a lot of things when she was in Genosha. She felt pain, grief, and pride. But what she didn't feel was surprise. I had the most profound sense of deja vu because we always end up in the same ugly place.
Yeah.
And as she talks, we see Magneto, having been freed from his confines, fly into space. We see Roberto and Jubilee taken prisoner, fitted with like the suppression colonies collars. We see the Summers family like that are completely pinned down by these human sentinels. And then Val like continues to talk like the scariest thing about Genosha wasn't the death or the chaos. It was a thought. It was the only sane thought you can have when being chased by giant robots. Magneto was right. And Magneto, as she's talking, he arrives at the North Pole and we see his power begin to flow across the planet. And lights go out across the world. We actually do a little check-in. Like, we see Spider-Man for just an instant. We see the Silver Samurai in Japan. And then we even take a trip over to Russia so that the Bacta tank that's holding fucking Omega Red starts powering down, releasing him. This is so fucking cool.
We talked about, you know, Magneto does an EMP blast across the United States a whole lot.
Yes.
Kind of a thing that he does. And we talk about the cost of this, right? Like, it's a thing where humans react in a big way to this because the death toll for this would be unimaginable.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And this is one of the first times that you can argue whether that was justified before. Here, it's basically undeniably justified.
Yes.
You know? It's the only thing they can do to stop this threat that is 80% of people turning into sentinels through here. So like, we're going to deal with the follow out of that. They're going to talk about like, oh yeah, you know, he turned off the power in the world. That's a big deal. If you were not rooting for him before, you are now.
Absolutely.
You know, like the show has done the work of getting you on board with this as an idea. Like, this is a heroic act here, and him and Xavier are going to fight about it. Coming here. And it's very interesting because they're not, I'm on Magneto's side. Magneto was right about this. It's not without cost. You know, when Xavier says, no, we can't give up on the dream, like during the next episode, like, yeah, like this did kill a whole lot of people and it is just going to cause more violence. Like, humans are going to retaliate about this.
Yes.
Ultimately, what the series does when they're dealing with Bastion is not punch him into death. You know, this idea that you do have to reject this stuff, but it gets closer than it ever has to an all-out war.
Absolutely.
You know, it toes that line really, really well and gets you on board with it and believing it.
And they do such a good job of solidifying all this stuff leading up to this, right? Like, you were like, it's just, it feels so thematically good when she says Magneto was right. And I think that's become like kind of a, obviously like kind of a catchphrase, like, you know, ever since Grant Morrison's New X-Men, of, you know, when you saw the kids wearing the shirts and everything, they do a lot of work to build up into this instead of just like plopping you into that. And it's so fucking satisfying. And we check in over at the mansion, where Rogue is still out and they're kind of protecting her. And I think it's Wolverine who says, like, Magneto finally did it. He declared war. Where's the professor when you need him?
The professor just immediately crashes in the exact same space.
I love this because like was he planning on crashing into the mansion to begin with? Like, if the mansion hadn't already been destroyed, would he?
Yeah, he was planning to destroy.
But obviously not. Like, obviously, like, he got into the field of the EMP, right? Like, and that's what turned off the machine. But like, it's just a very funny moment where he just crashes directly into the mansion, and he gets out. And I think this is supposed to be like a big joyous moment where he says, "I hope I'm not too late to me, my X-Men." And it is, but at the same time, you're like, it is kind of too late, Xavier. Like, in your mind, you're like, you're maybe a little too late with this. So,
yeah, they're going to continue this philosophical debate, you know, as they continue whether his dream still has any relevance.
And what a great episode. Part one of three. So we have a lot more to talk about, a lot more to go. And I'm very excited to get there. Like, I can't wait to talk about the next two episodes.
We're going to get into stuff in the psychic plane. That's cool.
What? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Right. What did you just say?
I know. But they're going to do cool stuff with the psychic plane. It doesn't seem possible, but they are. You know, it is a really, the end of the show fucking absolutely nails it.
Insane.
To a ludicrous degree. Really excited to finish it up. Really excited for next season.
Yes. Same. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We really appreciate it. If you want to support the show directly, go to patreon.com/DuckFeedTV. You can also leave ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and tell your friends and all that kind of stuff. We're getting close to the end of this series. By the time you hear it, we'll have already picked out something. But if you want to send in suggestions, just add us over at the Blue Sky, because fuck Twitter.
Yes.
We're over at the Blue Sky now. And Blue Sky, you can just type in somebody's name and find them. Like, it's no big deal. So just search up Jeremy Butterfield and Gary Greer, and you will find us absolutely with no
problem. You'll find our hybrids.
Find our weird hybrid children.
Yeah, we appreciate that. We appreciate you joining us on Patreon. We appreciate rating reviews. We appreciate you telling your friends. Mm-hmm. We appreciate all of it. Hang in there. Shit sucks right now.
Yeah.
Do your best. And we'll see you next week.
Next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.